Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Nicolet Wealth Management Podcast. Thank you for joining us. As always, I'm your host, Anthony Wilhelms. Joining me are our chief investment officers, Mike Steppy and Adam Longley. We have a lot going on in the world. Mike, will you kick us off on an update on the financial markets?
The financial markets are really feeling positive. The stock market continues to power forward. S&P 500 is so far year to date up 8.5%. The Russell 2000 is up over 3%. The IFA index, which is the international index, is up over 5.25%. This rally is based on a number of factors, but a key one is the excitement over AI. That has certainly caught investors' imagination. And also a belief in the Fed's ability to deliver a soft landing economic scenario where you've got sort of modest economic growth with decreasing level of inflation. So the Fed chairman has been outlining his thoughts to Congress over the past few days, saying the economy is slowing, inflationary pressures are decreasing. The Fed is likely to cut rates later in the year, quote, when appropriate. So that has sort of made people feel good. Bond market has rallied along with the stock market. We've had a lot of volatility. When you look at the beginning of February, a three-year Treasury note was at 4%. By sort of the end of February, it went up to around 4.5%. And now this morning, we're trading at 4.23%. So we're sort of in the middle of the range. At the moment, the market is focusing on the Fed and ignoring sort of the large Treasury deficits. So we've got that in the background, but it's not getting much attention. The U.S. debt exceeds $34 trillion, and we added $1 trillion of debt between September of last year and December. So at some point, that's going to become a market focus, but it isn't right now. The dollar has weakened with the lower U.S. interest rate differentials. So started February, went up about 1.8% by the middle of February, and then has dropped about 2.3% since then. And when you look at those movements, they've been in sync with what's happening with interest rates. So as the 10-year Treasury versus the German Bund, as that yield difference gets up around 2%, you see the dollar strengthen. When it narrows, you see the dollar weaken. Oil has been trading in a broad range of $70 to $85. And we're currently in about the middle of that range at 78.50. So it's been an interesting time in the markets with a lot of positive news, and the market has been reacting to that.
Well, how about another thing that seems pretty positive, which is employment lately? Mike, can you take a moment to comment on employment reports and what you see going forward?
Sure. The employment report came out this morning. 275,000 new payroll jobs, non-farm payrolls, and they revised the two previous months down. So there's been a fair amount of focus on the revisions. But I tend to, over time, look at the last 3 months and sort of average them. And I think that works pretty well. Growth in payrolls are up about 265,000 per month over the last 3 months. Then if you compare that to what happened last year, where payrolls averaged 232,000 per month during 2023. So you get a sense, these are really good numbers. It's a solid report. And the unemployment rate increased to 3.9%. That's not unexpected. Labor force participation rate at 62.5%, that remained the same. Average hourly earnings, which people are increasingly focusing attention on, was up 4.3% over the past 12 months, but that's sort of in line with expectations. So overall, a solid set of numbers that sort of keeps this focus on sort of, yes, we've got a slowing economy, strong, employment trends, and decent inflation numbers.
Man, almost all good news from Steppy in his intro and the first question. I don't know what is going to be next when Adam has comments on why equity markets have been good through the start of the year. Tell us a little bit about what's leading that and what you see going forward.
It's been a really good start to the year. We're early March here and we're sitting at all-time highs. It's actually the 17th or 16th all-time high of the year. I think what's interesting to think about is what's most, looking back historically, what's most likely to happen after we set an all-time high, and what's most likely is that we'll set another one. What's less likely is that we're going to have this pullback, which is often what you hear a lot of questions we get. I think just the thought of if you bought every time the market had an all-time high, obviously you would have made money, right? Because it continues to happen. And I think it's important to remember back to 2021. That's the year in which the calendar year that we had a 30% return on the market. We had 70 all-time highs. So clearly, the markets have been really strong, and it's been kind of supported by how well the economy is doing and how well companies are doing. If you again look at the S&P 500, we've kind of wrapped up fourth quarter earnings here, and companies made. Kind of the earnings growth was double what people expected. So earnings grew in the fourth quarter by 10%. People in the beginning of the year were thinking 5%. So clearly exceeded expectations. And a lot of that strength was, in multiple sectors. So there was some breadth and a lot of positive fundamentals driving these prices.
Adam, you mentioned double earnings growth, or I guess both double digit and doubling the pace of earnings growth when we look backward. When you push that forward and think about 2024 and maybe beyond, two questions in there. What type of earnings growth is the market expecting just to sustain our current multiples? And is there any room for expansion if you want to keep it on the rosy outlook or commentary side, or maybe reason for an expectation of contraction on multiples based on lagging earnings growth?
Yeah, let's talk about expectations first, and maybe to set the stage here. So 2023 calendar year earnings grew by less than 1%, but it was positive. Year before that, 2022, they grew about 5%. Now, when we look to 2024, expectations are that earnings are going to grow by 10 or 11%. When you look at 2025, expectations are that they're going to grow by over 13. So not only is the growth positive, but the growth rate is, the expectation is there's going to be an acceleration. Those are, pretty optimistic. But what we've seen here in the last couple of weeks as companies have reported and given some guidance, forward-looking guidance, these estimates have been revised higher. Which is positive. And obviously that's being reflected in the stock prices, but you're in an environment where you've got, positive growth, accelerating growth, and positive revisions. So that is reflected in the multiples. The market overall is trading at an elevated multiple. If you break it up, whether you look at growth versus value or large versus small, there are some parts of the market that are trading below their long-term average. And so, I think it gets back to kind of stock picking and being selective, but there's definitely opportunities.
Well, it's a good teaser on what the opportunities are. Don't worry, I'll come back to you to ask you what these undervalued sectors are and what places we might see some opportunity. And I'm going to move to Mike and give us a view, which maybe is opportunities because of interest rate movements. We've talked for probably the last 18 months about how the Fed is affecting markets with rate increases. And we've talked a lot about potential rate decreases. What do you see around the corner for us, Mike?
Well, I think the Fed has telegraphed that they won't increase at the March 20th meeting. So the next one's sort of fairly clear. I think most people right now are expecting that the Fed will decrease rates at the June 12th meeting. When you look at the futures market, it's pricing in 100% probability of that. So that seems like the most likely scenario. And then we'll probably see two or three rate cuts in the second half of 24. And that'll get us right now today, overnight interest rates are at 5.33. And I'm expecting that at the end of this year, they'll be 1% lower. So it's going to be trading in a range of 4.25% to 4.5%. So we'll see a decrease in overnight interest rates of about 1% over the next 10 months. The Fed is trying this to engineer this soft landing, and that's what they're trying to do. And so far, at this point, it's looking pretty successful, you'd have to say.
Well, Mike, I'd say it surely seems right. And now I want to, you have a lot of experience. You've been around the game for a long time. And I've heard this phrase of soft landing, both U.S. and abroad, many iterations. Are there any examples, because I don't seem to find them too often, that the soft landing is actually a real thing? Or is it typically been something that...
You're right. It's a unicorn. It just doesn't, you don't see it. So that's it. You know, and it's easy to criticize the Fed. I mean, I spent my whole career criticizing the Fed. So I don't give out too many compliments on sort of the, because they're easy to take shots at because they have to move so gradually. They're in a tough position when you're the biggest player in a global market. And you when you say something, it moves global markets. And we have so much debt that they have to move gradually and try diligently to not destabilize the financial markets. So, but in this case, they did. They pushed up interest rates to try to dampen down inflation. They got inflation on a downward trajectory, not to their 2% target, but they're getting there. And I think it's going to be sticky. I think it's going to continue to be a challenge because you've got these, you know, global supply chain differences, and you still have higher wage rates that are going to mean inflation's probably going to level out at 2.5% to 3%. But it's still, that's a lot better than what we were looking at a year ago when we saw sort of really high inflation. So we're off those 9% sort of levels, and we're at levels that are, you know, just above 3%.
Feels a little better. Soft landing. I'll hold on to it. I'll hold out hope, hold my breath for the good news to persist. Adam, you mentioned some sectors that maybe there's some space in 2024. Obviously, we saw the, however we phrase it, the Magnificent Seven carry the day with also strong earnings. But what do you see for the remainder of the year, and where might there be some opportunities?
Yeah, it was interesting. I went back and looked at, so the low was set for the S&P 500 in late October, and off the low, the present time here, an equal weight index was up about 21%. And then a market cap, which would be carry more weight than the Magnificent Seven, was up about 24%. So pretty close. But if you look at the first 2 months of the year here, we talked about the market was up 7.5. That equal weight was only up 3, and that now it's the Magnificent Six as these companies start to fall off, was up over 20%. So the divergence has continued again this year. The breadth has narrowed in the markets. But as we sit here, all sectors have generated a positive return year to date. But I think it's interesting, the cyclical sectors are up 6, and they're doing better than the defensive sectors, which are only up 3. So you got cyclicals up twice as much. And I think that's consistent with what we're talking about with growth, not only positive, but accelerating. So you want as much leverage to that as you can get. So looking at the cyclical sectors, I think what stands out to me is the industrials. Within industrials, earnings growth has been pretty good and getting better the last 6 months. And there's, you know, leading indicators that strength can continue or even getting better. There's also benefits from some fiscal policy and government spending that's starting to make its way into the companies. These companies have also, when labor was extremely tight, they made investments in automation. You're starting to see those benefits in productivity as well as margins. And then within industrials, you got the transportation sector, which could be near the bottom in terms of pricing and freight cycle. That they had a pretty nasty downturn that they're dealing with. And then on the other side, looking at defensives, there's one sector that stands out, and that would be healthcare. Healthcare saw large earnings revisions last year, negative. And so we think expectations for that sector are pretty low, and we find that attractive, to the point where that kind of sets the stage where expectations going forward in 2024, the sector with the highest potential earnings growth is healthcare, because they had that, they're coming off that, you know, anniversary in that bad year. So the earnings expectations for healthcare are even greater than tech stocks, which we talk a lot about. So industrials and healthcare kind of stand out today.
I love it. I always appreciate the insight. It's nice to buy something that may be undervalued from that healthcare and the industrial side. When we think of undervalued, we don't think Germany right away. But we're seeing European, or we'll say so developed markets outside of the US holding up reasonably strong, even though we see some struggles in Germany, maybe related to their manufacturing, lack of energy resources. How is that developed markets index holding up so well?
It is interesting to dig in here, because it has done well, and yet you've got Germany in or near a recession. So I think it's important to note Germany is about 8%, 8 or 9% of the index. And they've just had kind of a long list of headwinds. They were affected greatly by COVID in terms of their supply chains. They're negatively impacted by what's going on in Ukraine. They're in a position where energy prices are high. We've got an energy crisis. Contrast that with the U.S., where you have record high production, and it's arguably been deflationary. They've got a lot of headwinds. Growth has been negative or extremely low, yet inflation is high. So you got no growth, and you're dealing with inflation. So lots of headwinds in Germany. Then you have also in that index is Japan. And the weight of Japan is almost 25%. So it's about triple Germany. And Japan has just done phenomenal. Last year, it was up 28%. This year in 2024, it's already up 20%. So you can kind of see why the overall index has done well. When you look at Japan, I think there's a couple of things to point to in terms of why has that stock market done well. They've got some benefit of inflation because they've kind of been in a deflationary environment for a while. Their currency is depreciating, which has spurred some demand. And then they've had some corporate governance reforms that have made that investing in that country more attractive. So those tailwinds, along with a market that has arguably gotten cheaper as it's underperformed for decades, is now setting all-time highs, that levels that hasn't seen in decades. So, there's different moving parts.
I appreciate that. I didn't know what direction we'd end up with that. And it's fun to hear life in Japan in terms of investment returns. I think I've been talking about that market for my entire career without positive, good news coming out. So that's great to hear. Mike, I'll come back to you with bond spreads. So we've talked in the past on podcasts about how treasuries seem to be disconnected from credit fundamentals, but corporates don't get that same luxury. If a corporate is the company's doing worse, yields tend to go up. I talked about how that doesn't necessarily hold true on treasuries. When our debt increases, sometimes yields go down. Can you comment on how yield spreads have changed right now and a little bit about what causes that and where you expect that to go in the future?
When you look at corporate bonds, you are always starting with sort of what's the supply in the market. And this year we've had record levels of supply. So you would think that the spreads would have widened out on corporate bonds. And I would have bet on that. Demand has been incredibly strong, though, and we've actually seen spreads tighten. So right now, if you look at the difference, if you take a comparable maturity, so a 3-year corporate over a 3-year treasury, or a 5-year corporate over a 5-year treasury, and you look at those spreads, they're probably as tight as we've seen in the last 20 years. So that's surprising, and it's because demand has been so strong. My guess is supply is going to remain decent throughout this year. So we don't, it's not going to drop off dramatically. So I would expect that spreads are going to widen over the course of the year. They can't, I don't think this level of demand is sustainable. So I would guess that spreads will widen on the typical investment grade corporate bond.
So another question, and feel free to sidestep if it, you don't think it seems even logical. So when credit spreads would tighten, it would, or spreads in general, but credit specific, it would indicate to me it, the credit quality of the two assets or underlying assets is converging. Is that, do you think it's the market telling us that maybe credits are becoming closer in creditworthiness to treasuries, or vice versa, treasuries deteriorating to the level of a corporate? Or is it more a transient thing that's just a product of rate intervention presently?
It's more of a thing that in terms of the buyers have a demand for both. They want to get some additional yield, incremental yield, and they've been going for corporates. The demand for treasuries is incredibly strong. So from a credit fundamental perspective, you would say this shouldn't be happening. But the reality is it is. And the market's not focused on it. And the demand is there. And part of it is, it's still really attractive if you're a German investor to buy U.S. government bonds and U.S. treasuries. And so you continue to see on a global basis, people investing in our markets.
I love it. Well, gentlemen, it's always fun getting to talk through all of this. To our audience, thank you for joining us. We love the opportunity to communicate with you. Please reach out to anybody on our team anytime. We love the conversations. With that, Mike, I'll turn it to you for some parting thoughts.
It's we have a really great environment right now. And this is the time, again, we've got off to a good start to the year. You want to check your portfolio, make sure that if you are overweight something, this is a good time to make adjustments. And so I'd encourage people to do that.
Well said. Adam, parting thoughts from you.
Sure. The question I get a lot is, the market's up a lot to start the year. What do you think is going to happen the rest of the year? So a couple of things I point to looking at history. When the market comes off of a really strong year, like it did in 2023, when it's up more than 20% the following year, it generates a positive return over 80% of the time. And on average, that return is 12%, which would suggest further upside. And then to get in more into the weeds, if you look at January and February up 7% like we have this year, you go back 75 years, that's the 13th best start of the year. And what happens next over the next 10 months is the market has been positive 11 out of the last 12 times. And that return over the 10 months is another 10%. So like Mike said, things look good and the momentum is definitely positive.
Oh, I love ending these calls, recordings with positive news. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And we'll talk to you again soon.